The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
I invite you to open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 3. Developing a true sense of justice. As Brandon said, perhaps the two subjects seem to be in tension this morning. I hope that when we're finished, we know that they are not. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 3. The writer of the book of Proverbs begins verse 2, "To know wisdom and instruction, to receive the words of understanding." And then verse 3 following, "To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment in equity." And so the writer of the book of Proverbs sets forth at least one of the purposes for giving us this text. Apparently, we need some instruction about it. Most all of us have a sense of justice, or we have at least felt that sense of justice when somebody in our classroom or some friend, some neighbor yells, "That's not fair." Well, why are they saying it's not fair? What's not fair about it? Somebody has a sense of justice. It's been instructed. It's been taught. And in their mind, whatever was done or said or whatever judgment was set forth was not fair. This morning, what my intention is to make some general observations about justice, the nature of justice, and to weave into it a little bit of a discussion about what this means in the classroom, because I think that's what this gathering is about, at least. But it seems to me as though the subject is very big and touches us at very many different places, the classroom just being one of them. Now, Western civilization has decided to set up a system, a judicial system, and when we study world history, we go through this every year, and we talk about it and how it developed, and what it means to us, and how it's so great. We talk about the legislative branch of government, the executive branch of government, and the judicial branch of government, and we talk about how this means making laws and enforcing laws and interpreting laws. And all of this is the system that Western civilization has come to call our judicial system. I'd like for you to turn to Isaiah chapter 59. And we'll look at a few verses there. Isaiah chapter 59. According to the history books, Western civilization built their legal system on top of the Roman ideas of law in order. And perhaps to a certain extent that is true. However, there are some universal laws that apply, and it seems to me as though whatever the Romans did right, they derived from a sense of justice that God has planted in the human heart. I want to look here particularly at verse 8 in Isaiah chapter 59. Well, perhaps I should begin at verse 1. I wasn't planning to read all of this, but maybe that context would be important. "Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, neither his ear heavy, that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you, that he will not hear. For your hands are defiled with blood, and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue hath muttered perverseness. None calleth for justice, nor any pleadeth for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. They hatch cockatrice's eggs and weave the spider's web. The one's a poison, and the other one is, of course, an ensnare, a trap. He that eateth of their eggs dieth, and that which is crushed breaketh out into a viper. Their webs shall not become garments, neither shall they cover themselves with their works. Their works are works of iniquity, and the act of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. And now verse 8. The way of peace they know not. And here's the phrase I really want. And there is no judgment in their goings. They have made them crooked paths. Whosoever goeth therein shall not know peace. Now, I've already alluded to Western civilization and the judicial system that they set up. And it's supposed to be just. It's supposed to give everybody fair and equal treatment. But we wonder today what in the world has happened to Western civilization. If you read the philosophy and the theory behind it, it's no different to what it was 100, 200, 300 years ago. But yet we have trials like an O.J. Simpson trial where everybody knows the man was guilty. And yet, somehow, the way has been made crooked enough that when the bottom line is drawn, he's not guilty. Or you can take something like the abortion situation, and you can have the laws of the land say that it is just, it is right, in the name of the rights of people. You can take a baby and you can kill it, and you can take it and throw it into the garbage can. That's because Western civilization has developed crooked ways. And so when they've set up their system and you look at it and you see the net results, you find out that justice is not dealt out. In fact, on that subject alone, I am very, very frustrated. Not only frustrated, but prepared to tell you that the future of this nation is not good. It is not good at all. You can read the New Testament from cover to cover. The Old Testament especially, and the one thing that God absolutely could not stand is when the judicial system itself somehow did not protect the innocent. It hit. What do you find in the Old Testament? Well, you find that God gets very upset with his people because their laws began to provide room for those who were rich to oppress the poor, to make it difficult for them. And it goes on and on to say, many times over, you take advantage of the innocent. And for that reason, I'm going to cut you off. Now, I just ask you one question. Who are the most innocent people in our generation and in our society? Well, surely they are the children. And just keep going back. The unborn children are more innocent, I suppose, than even the two-year-old. And what this nation has done is it has taken and made the way so crooked that we can no longer even protect by law the innocent in our society. And I don't mean to be a doomsdayer, but just as sure as I'm standing here, that means double trouble for this nation and Western civilization. I don't know if time is going to last, but I don't count myself a prophet, but I would be willing to make a prediction. If there is not curtains for the world, you will see within 500 years and maybe even less a total destruction of Western civilization. I don't think it'll exist. I think it'll go into the archaeological archives. You'll find it under a pile of rubble if time lasts, because there has never been a generation of people who could, or a civilization that could so distort and twist their laws and their ideas of jurisprudence and get by with it. The only place you find any evidence of that anymore is 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 feet under the earth in the rubble. That's where you find it. And that's where this civilization will go as well. Now, that's a big picture situation. And I know we're talking classroom. But the idea that I want to address this morning is, what are the paths of justice that are straight. How can we apply them in our families? How can we apply them in our churches? How can we apply them in the classroom? How can we make straight paths for our feet, as the Scripture says? That's the burden of what I have to say this morning. I have a few things here on the overhead that I'd like to share with you. I made a little acrostic. This is not going to be by any means exhaustive, but we just want to examine the issues of justice and see what we can make out of them. Proverbs 4:18 says, "But the path of the just is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day." That's what we're after this morning. What kind of path is this? I have an acrostic with the word justice, and I have a few words that I would just like to share with you, which I believe can be applied in your classroom, that can be applied in your families, in your churches, and I sure do wish that this nation in which we live would apply it as well. The first word that I would like to use is the word jurisprudence. Are we okay there with where that's at? Jurisprudence. This is a very interesting word. It's a word that we use often on the jurisprudence of a certain nation or a certain group of people or the legal system or whatever. This comes from it's a Latin term, two words put together. It means law that foresees. Justice, good, a good system of justice produces laws that foresee. They look into the future. They anticipate. They expect. You can bring this into your classroom. If you have a good system of justice there, you have already set in place the parameters that are going to guide your classroom, and you have enough wisdom to see into the future far enough to know what you have to do to make that work. Now, just to be fair with you, none of us have that kind of wisdom. None of us have that kind of understanding. In fact, as I was thinking about this morning, it occurred to me again that if you were to bring in one of our justices from the Supreme Court and hear me talking this morning, he would probably be able to get up and defend the American position on abortion and do a pretty credible job of it if you just kind of separated it away from the big picture, what the ramifications that it was going to have down the road. He would be able to explain to you how there are wicked men all over the place, and these wicked men will sometimes rape women, and there will be conceptions, and you would got to do something about this. And he would pose us with some very difficult questions and say, what would you do in this case? What if the mother was about to die? And what if the doctor said that, Dr. Migliani said she is going to die if she has a child? Then what are you going to do? I can just hear all of those arguments being laid out, and all I can do is back up and say, but sir, you don't have enough breadth of wisdom and understanding and knowledge to set up your own system. You better go back and find out and start to derive your law from somebody who does know, knows the end from the beginning and sees the whole big picture. I can't answer all of your little questions. I just know that when a generation of people determine to destroy the innocent among them and take advantage of them, it is wrong. And I know that it is wrong for us to go into this abortion thing and for this country to legalize that. But my point is you can develop fancy systems outside of the wisdom of God. But you're not smart enough, and neither am I, to build one that's good enough, that will fit all of the picture. Some of you have heard John Martin talk about wisdom before. In his mind, wisdom is simply getting in line with God, getting in line with the person who sees the big picture and knows it all. And so all you do is say, you tell me what to do because I don't see it all, but you do. And that's what I'm talking about here. So jurisprudence is law that foresees. And that's what you want to bring into your classroom. Law that foresees. Second word, is the word universal. Universality. Justice is universal. You want to make laws, if you're going to make them, and you want to have a system of justice that is universal in nature. It covers the big picture. It takes into account the big issues of life. See, what happens is too many of us want to get down into the little trivialities, the little details. We want to make sure that these people don't take more than 15 steps to get to the water fountain. Or, you know, back in the scribes and Pharisees times, they were dealing with the number of steps you could take on the Sabbath day. And they had greatly delineated all of the details about how you could keep the Sabbath. And as Jesus so aptly said, you have totally missed the point. You were not universal in your thinking. This leads to the next one. Justice is simple. Because it is universal. Turn to Matthew chapter 22. And you'll see here, you'll get a better picture of what we mean by universality. I'm sure you've memorized these verses. I often come to these when I am troubled, disturbed, wandering. What is the right thing? I'm just going to read them out of the Bible because they're so powerful. Verse 36, here is a lawyer talking to Jesus. A lawyer who should know the law. These are men who have studied for years and years and years and years. They passed their bar exams. They've got their manuals, they've got their offices, and they've got their charges as well. Their rates are set. Master, which is a great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And then this great statement. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. This is what I mean by universality and simplicity. I can tell you that if you have a long list of rules for your church, or if you have a long list of rules for your family, or if you have a long list of rules for your classroom, any of those places where there's a long list of things that you do and you don't do, they're suspect. Why are they suspect? Because somewhere somebody has lost the idea of universality. The idea that law is very simple and it's all derived from some very fundamental ideas. And here are the most fundamental notions. This is the context within which you should judge the questions of justice in your classroom and develop them. Do they, in fact, demonstrate a love for God with soul and with mind and does it demonstrate a love for one's neighbor? Now, sometimes perhaps the connection is not all that clear, but I can tell you the thicker the book gets, the farther we're getting away from that universal notion. The idea that there are few rules that actually guide people's experience. Because it's true. You wouldn't need very many laws if everybody lived by that one simple one. Treat your neighbor as you want to be treated yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. If that was really, genuinely worked out, I don't know that there'd be a whole lot of other need for a bunch of laws. But see, we kind of back away from that. We can't get that to work very well, so then we know what we're going to do. We make the list of things that is supposed to work. I'm here to tell you that it does not work. Justice foresees. Justice is universal. Justice is simple. Justice trains. Now, I hope you're careful to see where I'm going with this point. I think we view justice as that thing that stands in place so that in the case, these boys over here, these girls or these convicts or these whoever, these criminals, in the case they do something wrong, zap, it's going to get them. Well, that's true. But that's not the only issue. A good system of justice trains people. It teaches people. It communicates truth to people. It helps them to understand how they ought to live. It helps them to understand how to love their neighbor. Its main point is not to punish the offender. Its main point is to train the person in the true ideas of how to love his neighbor. And hence, in your classroom, that's really what your laws should be about. You shouldn't have the kind of regulation that you have attached to it. You know, you don't. If you do this, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get zapped. I shouldn't say you shouldn't have those. Now and then they're needed so that students understand. And in some ways, that's training as well. But the bottom line should be these exist to train. Justice is impartial. Oh, how we struggle with this. How many of you teachers have favorites in your classroom? Come on, put your hand up, because I know that it's true. You can't tell me any different. I have taught too many years and have struggled with this too long to believe that you don't struggle with this. There are some people you just naturally like, and there are some people you just don't like. And there are reasons for it to be that way. And a wise teacher stands back, though, and says, the justice of God and the rules of loving one's neighbor as himself means that although I have likes and dislikes in this classroom, everybody gets treated the same. Now, we're human, and I just want to say very, very clearly, I have not always done that well. But that is an aim. Justice is impartial. It says, I don't care if the person is rich or if the person is poor. I don't care if they're high and mighty or if they're low. I don't care if they're 6 feet, 8 feet, or 4 feet tall. They all get treated the same. It's impartial. You all know, without me saying this, that in our churches, all you have to have, if you want to see a bunch of trouble begin to erupt, is have one of the people who are in leadership begin to treat their family differently than they do everybody else. And I mean in a positive sense. Boy, that church is headed for trouble. That group is headed for trouble. I had my sister in school when I was 22 years old, and she was 17. My little sister. She said, well, I'm going to get you for partiality. But she said, here's how it worked. You were way tougher on me than anybody else. I think it was kind of reactionary on my part. You know, I didn't want to get hit for being impartial to everybody else. And so, dear little Naomi, I'm telling you what, if she made the slightest move wrong, I was all over her about the way she did this or did that. Well, you got to watch that one too. That's not fair. Just because she was my sister, to be on her case. My point here is partiality has two faces. Okay, the one of them has that face of being tough on people that didn't really deserve it. And the other one has that face of just being lenient because this person was my favorite or whatever. And we struggle with this, don't we? I do. And I think we all just ought to admit that as teachers right to begin with and beg God to help us to demonstrate a clear impartiality, a clear fairness to our students. It's a tough thing to do. But we ought to learn it. Justice convicts. I think Paul articulates this argument actually in the book of Romans. Says, well, if there wasn't any law, that's true. There would be no offense. But justice, true justice, has a way of convicting. I remember reading through the Bible a number of times, but reading through there and reading across verses where God says, if you do so and so, that deserves death. And boy, I'm thinking, you know, really, I should die. According to that law, I should die. And a great conviction comes upon me. I need to change my ways. If justice is not worked out, people somehow don't think they have to change. Do you know that? If there isn't a sense of indeed for this kind of action, there is this result. For this kind of action, there is this result. When justice is withdrawn from a group of people, conviction goes out the door as well. It's like it doesn't matter. You could break the law. Look at the United States. I mean, the law is broken with impunity. Why is it? It's because justice is not intact. There might be laws there, but justice isn't there. When that's in place, we get the idea and conviction comes upon us. Justice is equitable. You can check your dictionary. I wasn't quite sure if that was the way that should be, but in fact, that is a word. And it's a good one. Equitable. It brings equality. And I know some of those other ones kind of touched on this. I turned for a text on this to the book of Leviticus. In chapter 25. Now we're talking about straight paths. And I just want to show you here how easy it is for us to kind of get away from a straight path. Chapter 25 is obviously the year of Jubilee. If you were to suggest this to 20th century Americans, it would drive them crazy. They'd say, what? You mean after I worked hard? After I had done this and done that and gained this and gained that, now all of a sudden, well, let's look at what it says is supposed to happen. Verse 11, a jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. Ye shall not sow, neither reap that which groweth of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in it of the vine undressed. For it is the jubilee, it shall be holy unto you. Ye shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. In the year of this jubilee, ye shall return every man unto his possession. And if thou sell aught unto thy neighbor, or buyest aught of thy neighbor's hand, ye shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the jubilee, thou shalt buy of thy neighbor, and according unto the number of years of the fruits, he shall sell unto thee. According to the multitude of years, thou shalt increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of years, thou shalt diminish the price of it. For according to the number of the years of the fruits, doth he sell unto thee. You shall not therefore oppress one another, but thou shalt fear thy God, for I am the Lord your God. Now you know how this system worked. I'm sorry, the way it was supposed to work. Every 50 years, now I'm 44 years old, but every 50 years what was supposed to happen is the land would go back to the original family that owned the land, free of charge. I was free to buy in between there, and of course it was incrementally decided upon. For example, if I bought it in the 40th year, 10 years until the Jubilee, well, the price was reduced because I was only going to have it for 10 years. But when that year came, the land was to go back. The land was to go back. Wilbur, where does yours go? Do you know who your original owner was? Just kidding. We'd have no end of trouble with this thing. That was the law of justice in God's program. I want you to think about this for a minute. What is our answer, the Western civilization answer, to poor people, to poverty, is handouts. This is a way we're going to solve the problem. We've got this thing kind of figured out. Do this and do this and give it to them. It doesn't sound all that bad. It sounds like you're not oppressing the poor, does it? But remember, wisdom, jurisprudence, is law that foresees. It sees ahead. It understands what's going to happen. And when that social system first came into the American system, there were some prophets who stood up and said, but you don't understand where this is headed. To the heart and soul of the American nation, if what you're going to do is you're going to start to solve the problem of poverty by just simply handing out money, just doling it out, writing checks, you're going to steal something from them that you thought you were giving to them.
There were a few people who had jurisprudence. They saw far enough to know that. Look in this passage. I mean, God even permitted them to be sold into slavery if they got poor enough. If things just didn't work out well for you, what would happen is you would end up, in essence, selling yourself to your creditor, and you'd work for them. But the day was coming, the year of Jubilee was coming, when that man had to set you free, and in fact, if you had land before, he gave you the land. That's the way it had to work. You didn't spend 40 years sitting around waiting for the government check to come every month. Oh, no. You worked, and that man was to provide for you, that's right, that creditor. He was to pay you enough that you could live and all that, and finally it'd all be leveled off. Again, the playing field would start again. That's what God said. See, that took into account some things that our civilization won't take into account. A few people understood what was going to happen. God knew that a long time ago, and we should have been wise enough to turn back there and look at this and say, sure enough, we see that if we're smart, we won't bring ourselves to just doling out money to people. That won't be the way we resolve this problem. Equable. In your classroom, it's the same way. Justice does not mean that what you're going to do is you're going to go soft and easy. All right, Milo, you're going to have something to say about compassion. I'm all for it too. But it's not handouts. It's not going easy on students. It's not being the nice judge who lets everything get... Oh, no, it is not that. It is kindly insisting that there is a way to live. We have been taught by God how to live, and you are responsible to live that way. I had some students one time... Oh, I don't know how much detail I should go into about this. It's one of the toughest things I ever did. A couple students failed English literature, I believe, in 10th grade. And the standards of our school said that you had to pass 4 years of high school English or you could not graduate. And so I took these gentlemen aside and I said to them, now, gentlemen, you failed this course. I want you to know now, right now, I want you to know that if 2 years pass and you don't make this course up, you are not going to graduate. I will not give you a diploma. Did you understand? Yes, I understood. Am I being fair? Yes, you're being fair. Covered all the ground. I said, I just want you to know, if that day comes and if you have not completed the work, you are not going to graduate. Well, during the next 2 years, I cajoled, I pushed, I shoved, I talked to them a couple of times. They were good boys. It wasn't like they were a bunch of rebels and troublemakers or that type of thing. But they just didn't do it. I think they thought that in the end, I would give in. I did not. The day they did not finish the course, and the day came for graduation, and I did not give them a diploma. And I told them, boys, this would not be fair to the rest of the students. Do you know that? You're putting me in an awfully tight position. That's right. I want to be kind to you. I would love just to give you one of these, but there is no way that I can do that. That would be unfair to you. It would be unfair to the students. I would be unfair to myself. I would be saying something about the school that is not good, and I will not do it. Equableness means that you cannot have a diploma. You have to complete the program. Sounded tough. I didn't like doing it. I hated every minute of it, but it was important. And I'm just saying to you in your classrooms, all right, be very careful about what you set up as the criteria, the rules, and so forth. But once you set it up, then you need to be equable. Treat everybody the same to the best of your ability. And we are human enough to know that we don't do that as well as we ought to. I have 6 conclusive remarks here. Number 1, justice protects the innocent and punishes the guilty. Protects the innocent and punishes the guilty. I want you to notice the first line. See, I think, again, in our minds, justice is such a nasty thing because it's always punishing the guilty. Oh, it has a very positive side to it. It protects the innocent. That's why the issue of abortion so aggravates me, because that's not just at all. It's something very, very different. Okay? But true justice, this is the general guiding rule. This is what should happen in your classroom. This is why you should be careful about making a rule that's sure enough. Here was, out of 30 students, there was a student that has given you a hassle. Let me give you a little instruction about this. Don't make a rule for that student. Because what's going to happen? Somebody who is perfectly innocent is going to break that rule somehow or another, and you're going to be in a tight spot. You're going to have to nail them when that wasn't your intention at all. You better take that person aside rather than make a rule to try to get them. You better take them aside and just talk to them and tell them there's a problem here and we can't have this. We expect something to happen differently here. This is called relationship. Let me say it this way. Be careful that you don't try to solve relational problems through jurisdiction, through law. That is not the way to solve those problems. All you will do is tangle yourself up into some kind of a big mess in your classroom. Protect the innocent, punish the guilty. That's the way it should work. And if your system of jurisdiction works that way, well, great. My point here is, too many times we get relational problems confused with what this is all about, and so we're making a law to try to solve that problem. It will not work. In fact, it will only confuse the matter. Don't do it. I already have been going on number two. It produces a true equality. And we struggle for this. Number three, it rewards honest labor. Now again, if you looked in Leviticus chapter 25, was there any problem with the man who went out there and worked hard and managed well and made a lot of money and was able to buy up five farms during those 50 years? Answer is no. They could do that. As long as they didn't oppress their neighbor, and as long as in that 50th year came along, they gave it back. True justice rewards honest labor. Now, bring it to the classroom. True justice is going to hand to that student who works hard and puts his all into it, it's going to reward him. I have labored for 20 years trying to figure out a good system that is perfectly equitable. I can't find any. But that's something I'm stretching for. I'd like to have that. I'd like to say to every student, I have treated you fairly. I think I am able to say this. I have treated you as fairly as I know how. In fact, if it comes to a question of points one way or another, I always give it to the student, and I can say that honestly. I always give it to the student. I don't ever want a student to have to be able to come back to me and say, you nailed me here, and it was not right. You did not reward me properly. And I really haven't gotten into that yet. But no, it's right to reward the person who has labored honestly. And our system in our classroom should do that. Number four, it resists unnecessary burdens. Matthew chapter 23, I believe, is where I want to go here. You know this passage as well as I do, but let me just read it to you again. 23, verse 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites. I'm sorry, this is not quite where I wanted to go with this one. I have that one for something else. I don't quite know where to go for the verse here on this, but you know what Jesus said? You are forever putting unnecessary burdens with your laws and your regulations upon people. A good system of justice does not do that. Some people who have heard me talk think that I run a classroom that is just tight. I mean, people come in and they sit down and they sit up and they get their papers out and they get their books out, and if they don't, I'm going to kick them straight out of the classroom. Well, you go ask my students. I am surprised at myself. I run it surprisingly loose. I want people to be people. I want people to respond the way people respond. I want them to be who they are. I don't want to so restrict them that they cannot be human beings. Our churches should not do that. Our schools should not do that. And our families should not do that. And Jesus taught us not to. And so why do we? Unnecessary restrictions. Now, I know that this can go the other way real fast, and that's where there's a libertine something going on, and people are afraid to make any restrictions. Ask my students again. I'm not afraid to make them, and neither should you be afraid to make them. If they've got to be made, well, then make them. But always with that bottom line, this is going to free this classroom, this is going to love my neighbor as myself, these are the parameters. I have thought through those issues, and I am prepared to make this rule, because I see that if I don't make it, this is going to be bad for the classroom, and I'm going to hurt this person over here and hurt that person over there. Here's a guy taking advantage of everything. This is going to have to change. And so we make the law. But people who multiply laws, leaders who multiply laws, teachers who multiply laws until those people can hardly be people in their classroom, are making a mistake and giving people the wrong idea of justice. Justice resists unnecessary burdens. Number five, justice differentiates between important issues and trivia. That's what I wanted this verse here for. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. And then, of course, this little disclaimer, these ought ye to have done and not to have left the other undone. There's a simple rule here. The more you concentrate on trivia, which is not necessarily wrong in itself, but the easier it is to omit the weightier matters of the law. What it's all about. If there is no other reason for keeping your list of rules short, this is a good one. Right here. Because the longer it gets, the easier it is to trivialize. And the easier it is to trivialize, the easier you forget the weightier matters of the law, of judgment, mercy, and faith, which I believe Milo is going to talk about. But true justice knows how to make that difference. This is the reason I keep saying to classroom students, choose your issues carefully. Okay? When it comes down to classroom management, day-by-day running of a classroom, if it comes down to a family, even there, I don't think parents should jump on their children about every little detail. But dads, listen to me. When you know that your little gal needs to have some instruction about something, well, you just wait until the issue is big enough and clear enough and sharp enough that there's no question, and that's the time to walk right on into it. And it's the same thing in your classroom. Don't ever choose some little matter of trivia and make a big mountain out of it. It'll only destroy your students' confidence in you. It'll only make it difficult for you in the long run. If you recognize a problem, just wait. Just wait for a little while. It'll come up. I've had students come to me before and say, so-and-so's cheating. Okay, so-and-so's cheating. Thank you. All I'm going to do, I know one thing. If a person has a habit of cheating, what's going to happen? They're going to cheat again. Yeah, I'm alert now, and I'm going to watch, and I'm going to be a little careful. I'm not going to go into a witch hunt. I'm just going to kind of be observant. If that person really has a problem with that, it's going to come up again. And I'm going to wait for it to come up in the context where there's no question, and I can deal with it in a good, solid sense. There is nothing worse, almost nothing worse, than if you go to a person and you accuse them of cheating, or you suggest to them they've been cheating, and in fact, they have not. That's a very difficult situation, because now what are they supposed to do? Somebody has this idea that they were cheating, and now they're confused, they're mad, they're angry, there's everything else wrong with the thing, and you can't, it's one of those situations, you can't make it right. There's no way you can get it untangled. You just got yourself into a big mess. Don't camp on trivia. Wait for the big issue. Deal with it then. Mete out justice as it should be. And my last point comes from Leviticus again. It proclaims liberty throughout the land. American history buffs, where do we find this verse? Anybody from 20 years old and younger, where do you find this verse? Shannon, it's on the Liberty Bell, okay, of this nation. Proclaim liberty throughout the land. Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 10. And ye shall hallow the 50th year. This is set right in this context of this law. Ye shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land. Justice is far from being restrictive. What is truly worked out in the name of God, in under God, and in the wisdom of God. It is not restrictive. It is not negative. It produces liberty throughout the land. But the path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. Let's sing that little chorus in closing. He has shown thee, O man, what is good.
He has shown thee, O man, what is good. And what doth the Lord require of thee? But to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God. To be like Jesus, to be like Jesus, all I ask. To be like Him, all through life's journey, from earth to glory, all I ask, to be like Him.
Thank you, Melvin, for sharing that with us. And I'm just struck by the last statement he shared with us, how much we have been pressured to think that justice is going to be restricted in our land. I mean, America is, everyone wants to do their own thing because they think it's freedom and liberty. And our house is falling in around us.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.